for episode 13, Julie, the Animals and Me. I don't really know how I felt leaving New York. It wasn't mixed emotions because we're leaving Julie behind. We weren't leaving her behind. Her ashes lying on the ground in her favourite spot, that was just a sign of respect and a memory to keep. It's like going to a place you always wanted to see and taking a photograph to remind you of the day and the experience. The photograph of Julie's resting place will be etched in my memory forever. Julie's not in New York. She's always with us. So leaving New York City, that side was happiness. I knew I'd be returning. I love New York, and Julie's special spot in Central Park gives me a good reason to go back. There was definitely a lot of pride regarding scattering Julie's ashes. I thought I'd done it for her, but really, I'd done it for everyone. Everyone who knew and loved her. I hope the things I've done to respect Julie has helped a lot of people. I hope her family and friends know she's been respected and always will be. I have a memorial in the lounge with fresh flowers and other precious items. In the kitchen stands her photograph, with fresh flowers behind it and a candle beside it. When the candle's lit at night and the lights are turned out, the candlelight flickers and lights up Julie's face. It represents a flickering light that longed to shine. That's the way I think of Julie when I first met her. A flickering light that longed to shine. And she did. She shone brightly. The wicker heart from her casket is in the garden, propped up in the reeds at the far end of the pond. That puts Julie back in the garden, somewhere she'd love to be. It's good when people visit, that they see these memorials, because people cared for Julie as I did. My children need to know that their mother's memory lives on in our home, and for future grandchildren to be able to light Nana's candle or turn on the LED star over a memorial, and instead of simply saying that Nana died before I was born, they can talk about their Nana as part of their lives. Because she is part of their lives. She's part of them. These memorials will always remain, no matter who's in my life, because Julie was the mother of my children, a massive part of my life, and will remain so. Her spirit lives on, but my life has to move forward. It needs to move forward for me and my family. If my life stagnates, then that will affect their lives. I'm not saying I'm moving forward for them. I'm not. I'm moving forward for me. But doing that stops their lives being hindered, worrying if their daddy's okay. I'm stopping the domino effect. If I fall, they fall. I've realised this from an early stage of my recovery and driven myself forward. No, when I left New York, I just had a lot to think about. The scattering of the ashes was just the last major thing to do. It was important, but I then felt that I could now draw a line under it and start to plan ahead and really move forward with this new life I was living. It's important in life to know where the end of one thing is and where's the start of another. Sometimes you see that in studying, where students just carry on with degree after degree after degree, without using any of them for the career that they first set out to have. It's as if they've got so used to studying it becomes their life, as if they're scared of moving on. Studying is their comfort blanket. In bereavement, you could very easily do the same thing. Just another excuse to carry on moping and not move forward. Basically, refusing to break the cycle, whether intentionally or not. Mentally, I was feeling a lot stronger than I had been. I felt that I was really getting to grips with the situation, understanding the part I had to play, feeling totally in control of my destiny. Spiritually, the light was bright. It had gained such strength over the last 9 months. There was a four-way connection between myself, Julie, God and my guardian angel. I truly felt that. They were all helping me, guiding me, and luckily I recognised their help. I was stood up straight again, shoulders back, proud that I'd survived the storm and was driving forward. Most importantly, I was very happy in myself. Obviously things didn't feel normal. How could they? In a way, I was living my third life, all of them completely different. The first one for 23 years before meeting Julie, I was just growing up, finding my feet. the second one for 29 years with Julie, I was creating a family and learning how to be a father and husband. And now I was living this new life, which was only 9 months old. So how could I be used to it? Especially as I still had the mental wounds to deal with from the previous life. I was mindful that these were wounds, not scars. Wounds can be healed. Scars stay with you forever. When you stand up straight again, there can be no scars. Your brain needs to think of the past with happiness, not sorrow. If you can't think of the past with happiness because of the type of trauma you've endured, then you need to turn it full circle and turn your sadness or sorrow into pride. Pride that you survived. Pride that you turned the situation around, that you've prevailed, and pride that you're not looking back with bitterness. Bitterness will only drag a bad memory along with you, and therefore you will never rid yourself of it. What's happened has happened, and what's happened was not your fault. Unfortunately, it's just part of life. Life can be very cruel at times, but when you've hit rock bottom, the only way is up. Though I knew I still had a long way to go, there'd be massive changes in my life. I was trying to get used to this new life to start with, and though this seems deep, I was still finding out who I was. I was a different person. I was a lot calmer, wiser, mentally stronger. I felt I could never truly be hurt again. I was physically fitter, healthier, and there was something else that I'd noticed I now had the ability to do. Something that I'd taken from Julie. I'd always looked for the good in people, always giving them the benefit of the doubt. People sometimes took advantage of the good in me, where on the contrary, Julie was Miss Marple. There was no fooling her. She had people sussed immediately. She read their body language, noticed every word they said, never forgot a snippet of information. She read people like a book. You couldn't pull the wool over that girl's eyes. I've now gained that ability. Not as strong as Julie had it, as I still want to be totally open to people, give them a chance to shine, to change, to be better. But yes, I now have that ability. I read people's body language so much better and kind of see what they're thinking, which was something I never had the ability to do in my first two lives. I'm definitely a better judge of character. This isn't the first time I've gained something Julie once had. When I think back to when Julie had a brain tumour and totally lost her sense of smell and taste, overnight my sense of smell and taste improved dramatically. It really helped me in my cooking for one, and also keeping the house clean and odour free. I could smell or taste something bad a mile away and still can. I profited from something she'd lost. Her handicap benefited me. Physically and emotionally sharing things didn't stop there. When Julie was pregnant with our first child, Julie didn't get morning sickness, I got it. It was like emotionally sharing the burden, really being part of the pregnancy. We were very much in tune with each other, spiritually as one, helping each other to become better people. We'd definitely been put together, there's no doubt in that in my eyes. Our spiritual connections and shared energies didn't stop with Julie and I. Our pets were involved. When we first met, I had a dog called Baloo, who was 18 months old. Julie was a massive animal lover, and therefore she was delighted that she now had a dog. Even though I was his master, Baloo started to protect Julie from the off. A couple of years on, this protection suddenly went overboard. He wouldn't leave Julie alone. He followed her everywhere around the flat we lived in. If Julie went to the toilet, Baloo would sit beside her. If she had a bath or a shower, he would sit in the bathroom waiting for her. He followed her room to room. This went on for weeks. We couldn't understand it. Then we found out Julie was pregnant. It all made sense. Baloo had known all along. He was the first to know. And when that child was born and we brought her home, Baloo immediately licked her forehead and protected her. When he was 16, he collapsed, and we had to have him put down. Julie was obviously very upset. I can only recall a handful of times I saw Julie cry in 29 years that I knew her, and this was one of them. The following day, her eyes were very puffy from crying, and when they eventually cleared up, one of her eyes became blurry. It didn't clear the same way as the other eye did. This lasted weeks. She went to the opticians for eye tests, to the doctors, to the hospital for other tests and scans. Nothing showed up. this problem continued to get worse. 4 months later, out of the blue, she received a phone call from a doctor who had seen Julie's scans and told her that she needed to go to hospital the following morning. Julie had a brain tumour. Without Baloo dying, this wouldn't have been detected and would have carried on growing. He protected her to the last. Baloo dying possibly saved her life. Most people would call that a coincidence. Really? Where does life, does death? Those people didn't see the way he was with Julie for all those years. A man's best friend, as they say. They're there to protect you. They know and are aware of things we don't. There's a special bond between ourselves and our pets, especially dogs. We have a connection with them. Sometimes they're even more special than our own family. When people talk about their bereaved family and friends, they don't seem to get as upset as when they talk about their dog who died. Our pets are special to us. They're more like our children. They see and feel things we don't. They know when we're ill or upset, and they are very attuned to the spirit world. We have a cat called Willow. She's a Bengal. I bought her for one of Julie's birthdays. Around 10 weeks after Julie died, Willow had a spiritual moment. This particular morning, I opened the door from the lean-to and she walked in as usual and headed for her food. The lounge door was wide open. Suddenly, Willow just stopped in her tracks and freaked out. She just stared at the door as if she'd seen a ghost. She stood there for a while, absolutely frozen to the spot, transfixed. She then backed off into the lean-to, still staring at the door. Her eyes were popping out of her head. She wouldn't come back in the house. I know Julie was stood at that door. Willow sensed it. In the 7 years we'd had her, I'd never seen her act that way. There was also the time in December, less than 4 months after Julie died. Willow went missing for 2 days. Now, she did go missing from time to time, but hadn't for over a year, and only ever stayed out in the height of summer when the weather was glorious. This was December. I regularly checked the lean-to to see if she was on her chair. I kept thinking, I can't lose Willow now, not after Julie. I started to get worried. On the afternoon of the third day, I checked the lean-to one last time and then went up to Julie's photo in the kitchen and said, Julie, go and get Willow. I started washing up, and when I'd finished 10 minutes later, I went straight to the lean-to and found Willow sat on a chair. Now people will say, it's a coincidence. Maybe it is. But I know the history of that cat. I know the way she behaves, her patterns. We got her as a kitten 7 years earlier. So as well as her only ever going missing in the middle of summer, if she stayed out, she only ever returned in the early hours of the morning, never during the day. Yet after being missing for 2.5 days, she returns home within minutes of me asking for Julie's help. Spooky. Willow was a great help to me when Julie died. She was Julie's cat, but now she was mine. I'd adopted her in a way. I kept telling her that. She handled Julie's death well. That might sound silly to some people, but if you would have seen her drop into a deep depression when our dog Max died in 2018, then you would understand my concerns. She totally changed when Max died, but luckily the only change when Julie died was the extra affection she showed me. She showed no signs of depression. Maybe she'd gotten used to Julie not being here after she spent a month in hospital, who knows. But one thing I do know is, Willow was a great reminder to me. A reminder that things were different now, that it was me and her together. She sat on my knee on a very regular basis, something that she'd rarely done before. It really reminded me that Julie was gone. It helped bring reality to my life. My son was either out climbing or with his girlfriend. The house felt empty, especially downstairs. I think Willow and I comforted each other. I really do. We both needed each other. Maybe she knew that. After we got back from New York and settled back into our lives, there was the constant thought of my first grandchild. I wasn't excited about the news, but I did think it was lovely for my daughter, her fiancé, and for my two mother-in-laws. Julie was their only child, and to have their first great-grandchild would be a huge lift. Something for them to really look forward to and enjoy. A product of Julie. Personally, I could only see my daughter having a girl. I'm not one who has any special abilities when predicting the sex of a baby, but each time I thought of names, I only thought of girls' names. When I tried to think of boys' names, my mind went straight back to girls' names. I thought at first it might be because I preferred a granddaughter, but this kept on happening. After a while, I could only see it being a girl. But whatever sex it was part of Julie returning to us. The baby wasn't due until late December, so we had plenty of time to get used to and prepare for the new arrival. I was now planning my next adventure for late September. This was going to push me a bit further. I was going to fly into Malaga, hire a car and spend 2 weeks travelling around Andalusia, visiting 7 different places. I was now confident and happy about doing this trip on my own. Friends kept wondering why I was going alone. I'd come such a long way since my first trip to Scotland. This was more of an adventure than a test. The different cities, different culture, Spanish history, scenery, freedom, hiking, beaches. What's not to like? Another thing I was intent on starting was the dating process. On the flight home from New York, I ended up talking to a lady who sat across the aisle from me. She was in her early 40s and was so easy to talk to. So easy, in fact, that we ended up talking non-stop for 5 hours. It was the fastest 5 hours of my life. I don't think I've ever gelled and felt so comfortable talking to a stranger in my life. She had such a good balance about her and seemed very happy in her own skin. You could instantly tell that. Being happy in your own skin has got to be one of the most attractive features in a person. I needed someone like that. Someone who was calm through life experience, who was bubbly, happy, funny, attractive, kind and caring. This lady was all of these. I said goodbye and watched her leave the plane, and that was the last I saw of her. But she made me think. I needed someone like her. It was lovely meeting her. And wherever she is, or whatever she's doing, I wish her all the luck in the world, I truly do. The next step in my life was truly on. A step I never thought I'd be doing in a million years. A crazy thought. Whoever came into my life had to respect Julie. Jealousy couldn't come into it. I needed somebody who was happy in their own skin. If they were happy in their own skin, then the rest of the qualities needed would follow naturally. The hunt was on.